Chapter 4. They want you to be a teenager on an allowance, and that's just the beginning. Money is freedom. I know the more common expression is money is power, but I'd like you to consider the idea through my reframing of the concept. You may remember being a kid on a weekly allowance, and while you were delighted by the things you might buy with your newfound wealth, like candy, soda, music, or video games, you came to realize it was also a source of control by your parents. You didn't want to put that weekly income at risk, because then how would you get your favorite candy or cool new thing you absolutely had to have? Many have had the experience of being a teenager and getting some crappy, low-paying job, like delivering pizza or working at the checkout stand of your local pharmacy. And you felt that excellent rush of having more freedom. You didn't have to depend as much on your parents. And whether you went to college or started your working career at 18, there came that wonderful moment when you were free of all financial ties from your family and could be the captain of your own ship. For most people, this allows them to take a fresh look at their parents, seeing them as individuals who were doing the best they could at the time, often under difficult circumstances, to raise decent and honorable human beings. For most people, freedom and growing up allows them to have a better relationship with their parents than when they were dependent upon them. That's because the human soul inherently desires freedom as the way to live an authentic and fulfilled life. We want to make our own choices, free from coercion. And after that point, we'll figure out who is, and who is not, a genuine friend. Let's talk about the idea that money is freedom when you're an adult. Imagine one individual stuck in a crappy job, living from paycheck to paycheck. He's got less than $1,000 in the bank. Is he free? Can he tell his boss to take this job and shove it? Not without putting himself under immediate financial pressure. Imagine the same individual in the same job, but he's got 2 years' worth of salary in the bank. The situation is much different. He can walk away from that job. Hell, he's likely to be whistling and skipping as he does it, a big grin on his face. Money allows you to be free. The globalists want you to be poor and dependent on them. So like an employee living paycheck to paycheck, or a teenager on an allowance, you won't raise a ruckus when they try to implement their totalitarian plans. But unlike most parents, who are simply trying to get their kids through their teens and early 20s without making terrible mistakes, the globalists don't ever want you to become free of their control. And if you attempt to be free of them, they just may try to kill you. Most Americans revere the courage of General George Washington, who led the ragtag American army against the soldiers of the British army, the greatest fighting force in the world at that time. But here's something you may not know about George Washington. He was one of pre-Revolutionary War America's richest individuals, with a net worth estimated at $587 million today. In addition to not taking a salary for being Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army, he paid a number of expenses to keep the fledgling force together, eventually submitting a bill for his expenses of $160,074, or about $4.5 million in today's money. That's not even considering the likelihood that, if he'd lost the Revolutionary War, he would have been hung as a traitor, and all of his assets would have been seized by the British Crown. It's a poorly understood fact, but the more money you have, the greater your freedom. And what do we have in America today? This is from a recent article in Fortune. According to Bankrate's annual emergency fund report, 68% of people are worried that they wouldn't be able to cover their living expenses for just 1 month if they lost their primary source of income. and when push comes to shove, the majority, 57% of U.S. adults, are currently unable to afford a $1,000 emergency expense. Is it clear how financial insecurity is leading toward an erosion of our freedoms? Fearful people don't take risks. They hunker down. A population fearful and worried about not having enough money to live for a month is going to be a population that submits to an experimental vaccine for which the makers have no liability. A fearful population is less likely to think and weigh the issues, or even ask for more information, before agreeing to the government's plan to avoid the looming danger, whether that be COVID-19, the climate crisis, or white supremacy. How do you keep people from thinking? Terrify them with some existential threat. The disillusionment of the middle class over their declining standard of living is real. Take jobs away and ship them overseas, and you get increased alcohol and drug use and all of the attendant problems. How can you think about the problems of your community when you're worried about your family blowing apart from drug addiction? In my opinion, this is the plan to keep us divided. I had money, more than enough to keep running InfoWars and being a thorn in the side of the deep state establishment. And what did they do? They came up with a case about something I apologized for years ago and slapped me with more than $1.5 billion in damages. Do you think I've felt like a free man? I have not. But for me, it's not about the money. It's about the message, the people, and the obligation I owe to God that, while I live on this earth, I am going to do my very best to do His will. Money is also communication. If you don't have it, you're not going to be heard by those in power. If you are in a position of financial weakness, you don't have much of a voice. And you have a false friend in the Democrats who only want you more dependent on the federal government. Here's the thing about money. Money allows you to make money. It allows you to take risks on good people and their ideas. Money allows you to provide safety and stability for your family. If you aren't in panic mode, you have the space to cultivate wisdom and discernment. The whole idea of the American dream is that anybody can start with nothing and rise to be affluent. We have prided ourselves in America that, unlike other countries, we do not have a class or caste system. The son of a plumber can become a billionaire. But is that true anymore? Or are we being systematically deceived about the path to success and led into the box canyon of debt and despair from which so many are clamoring for rescue? The media would have you believe that the path to success begins with education, namely an undergraduate degree at least, and if you really want to increase your odds of success, a graduate degree from a prestigious university. But the government has flooded the education system with money, ostensibly because they wanted to help, and the result has been a catastrophic increase in tuition for those students. Colleges and universities don't have to compete for student dollars. They just get to suck on the big, milk-filled breast of the government. Of course, those colleges and universities are now financially tied to the government. So, when the government says, "We think it's a good idea to give an untested COVID vaccine to your students," the only response they give is, "How many doses?" In addition to having the colleges and universities dancing to their tune, the government gets to enmesh itself in the lives of these college students starting at the age of 18. How's that for a great choice? Beg from your parents or get the money from Uncle Sam, who you'll be paying off for decades. Maybe you could join the military, but you'll still be forced to get those shots. Or you could work at a minimum wage job. But because the price of tuition has gone up so much because of the government's actions, your minimum wage job won't be enough to pay for college. Is our entire financial system built on an unstable foundation? Between 1905 and 2008, we printed roughly $1 trillion in this country. But by 2023, that number had ballooned to over $8 trillion, according to the Federal Reserve's own numbers. This includes currency in circulation, cash in banks and ATMs, as well as the creation of bank electronic reserves, or money that does not exist in physical form, but only within the computer systems of the various financial institutions. That's right. The Federal Reserve, with the clapping approval of both Republicans and Democrats, just magically made all that money appear, like champagne wishes and caviar dreams. Do we have any idea what our currency is actually worth? And the ideas just keep getting worse, because the United States government allows the printing of money like a crazy person. The banks decide they want to get in on the action as well. You used to believe the banks were places with big, impressive vaults, and you imagine bank robbers wanting to break into those vaults, maybe by tunneling in like some criminal mastermind. But if you looked in those vaults today, they'd be empty. The requirements for actual physical assets to be held by banks has dwindled to the point of insanity. It's all digital, don't you know? Banks are working with each other on creating digital currency, and they're looking to enslave you in this scheme as well. And do you have any faith in those financial hucksters on television trying to dazzle you with expressions like investment portfolio and wealth management? They want you to make choices which will give them even greater control. How do you begin to fight back against this avalanche of misinformation? By understanding how it all started. Let's begin with a brief history of money. Money is supposed to be a representation of value. In other words, while the money itself is just a coin or piece of paper, with the raw materials likely costing just a few pennies, it represents the value of some physical, tangible asset. Countries traded their currencies with each other, and there was an understanding of what the value was, based on the tangible assets of the country, which, for the most part, was gold. However, in 1913, Congress passed the Federal Reserve Act, which took the United States off the gold standard for transactions that took place in America. That meant the Federal Reserve had the ability to print money if necessary. But to its credit, it did so sparingly in the decades that followed, even during World War II, relying more on taxation and domestic borrowing. However, international trade could still be settled in gold, and this was believed to add to the stability of the global trade system. It's understandable that as World War II ended, with the economies of so many nations ruined, there would be a move to establish a single currency as the reserve currency for the rest of the world, protected from the ravages of war by the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. The United States was the logical choice to be this reserve currency. And in July 1944, the Bretton Woods Act made the U.S. dollar the reserve currency for the rest of the world. Besides the fact that the United States escaped the destruction visited upon Europe and Asia, it had a stable political structure, which many might say was a proxy for their financial stability. This was an ideal state of affairs for the United States, allowing gold to be the universally recognized measure of trade between nations, while also allowing the United States to have some flexibility in their domestic spending. I encourage you to view this as handing a credit card to your 16-year-old child as he or she starts to drive, while also monitoring monthly expenses to make sure spending does not get out of control. You want that credit to be available to your child in case of an emergency, like their car breaking down and they need to pay for a tow, But you've made it clear there's to be no reckless spending. But let's say that kid is graduating college. You've seen years of responsible behavior, and you're not monitoring things as closely as when they first got the card. In 1971, France wanted some debts paid back by the United States, and they wanted to be paid in gold. Nixon said, "No, we're going to pay you in dollars," and that's what happened. He closed the gold window. Nixon replaced the gold standard with the petrodollar, while maintaining the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. This had the unintended consequence of meaning that all international settlements in oil had to be traded in U.S. dollars. The only way this could be done was for the United States to print more money than it needed domestically. When you consider all the countries that need to purchase oil, that means you need to print a massive amount of dollars. That allowed our debt to explode to the point where it's at more than $31 trillion. That might not be as bad if our country had a strong growth rate, but that isn't happening. We've lost our dynamism. Instead of a vibrant economy, we've got declining wages, rising inflation, rising taxes, and rising interest rates. As I said before, 58% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, meaning they're about a month away from needing to file for bankruptcy. Who's being served by this state of affairs? The government is being served because the populace is terrified and looking for reassurance from them. Can I get me a little universal basic income? But the banks are making out like bandits because guess who's reaping the benefits of those higher interest rates? Does the disillusionment of our young make more sense now, and why they might be falsely led to the idol of progressivism and a government that they expect will care for them from cradle to grave? What they do not fully understand is how government decisions have deformed genuine free market capitalism and merit-based success into a cruel crony capitalism. This arrangement benefits the wealthy by creating a form of corporate socialism on one hand and a crushing economic burden on the middle and lower class struggling to improve their financial status on the other. Instead, we have a system that combines the worst parts of capitalism and the worst parts of socialism, and this monstrosity has no moral or religious compass. It is a profoundly anti-human system, which can only result in enormous suffering. Don't be distracted by the players, whether it's Janet Yellen running the Federal Reserve, or Lawrence Powell, or Ben Bernanke, or Alan Greenspan. It's the system in which they're allowed to operate that is the problem. From what I've known of major players behind the scenes, I suspect if you got any of these Federal Reserve types behind closed doors, they'd agree with a lot of what I'm saying. I've heard it said by Ivy League economists with impeccable credentials that there really aren't liberal economists who are respected by the field, only conservative economists who, if they subject themselves to the political process, try mostly without success to limit the damage done by politicians of both political stripes. And so, what does the rest of the world do when they see this reckless behavior by the United States, who has the 800-pound club when it comes to economics, while they only have a BB gun? They try to create a new global reserve currency. That's where the so-called BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, Iran, China, and South Africa enter the picture. Collectively, all these nations have a larger economy than the United States. But individually, they suffer from the problem of political instability. However, that risk is mitigated because it's shared among the six nations. What's the probability of all six nations undergoing political turmoil at the same time. Most people would see that risk as low, and I'd have to agree. Given current conditions, this is likely to be disastrous for the United States, because these countries will kick the U.S. dollar to the curb, collapsing this house of cards. And the BRICS countries have logical reasons for wanting to displace the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency for global trade. The United States has not acted honorably in many instances, irresponsibly using their status as the reserve currency of the world, to spend in ways that would make a drunken sailor blush. But the question is, what will the BRICS nations do? Will they act against the genuine interests of the United States? Despite what my critics might say, I am not a simple black and white thinker. Just because I may challenge the actions of the United States does not mean I believe all the other nations of the world are filled with virtue. As the most profound psychology and philosophy tells us, we are all composed of darkness and light. The challenge of our existence on this plane of being is to cultivate the good while weeding out the bad. The wisdom of the oath elected officials take before assuming office, when they swear to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, bears witness to this profound spiritual truth. What is the emerging outline of how the replacement of the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world might look? Brazil recently signed a bilateral trade agreement with China, with the exchange being paid for in the Chinese yuan rather than American dollars. Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Russia signed a trilateral trade agreement and decided the transaction would be in Russian rubles. In December 2022, because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Japan joined other G7 nations in pledging not to pay more than $60 a barrel for Russian oil as a way to punish Russian President Vladimir Putin. But with the price of oil hovering at just a little under $80 a barrel, Putin just shrugged his shoulders and decided to find other buyers. And what was the result? In April 2023, Japan decided they were going to buy Russian oil at the market rate. What happened to this wonderful accord among the G7 nations? The fact is, it didn't make sense, because the world needed Russian oil. Russia had the advantage, and Putin knew it. That's what happens when the people choose Joe Biden, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, and he decides to drastically cut domestic oil production. Some of you may think I'm beating a dead horse, but if Trump had been reelected, he would have kept producing domestic oil, and the world price for a barrel would be much lower, and Putin wouldn't have had the money to finance his invasion of Ukraine. I consider that to be a simple fact. But why did Japan make such an unprecedented decision to throw in with Russia? Because it made sense. The BRICS countries are making a well-reasoned case that the United States has done a bad job of maintaining their status as the reserve currency of the world. That means other countries are willing to look at a new international financial order. Because of our own stupidity, we have potentially lost our best ally in Asia. That giant sucking sound you hear is world confidence in the United States rushing away from us and going to the BRICS nations. In France, Prime Minister Macron has said that the French will start dismantling the demand for the dollar in their country. Remember France, the indispensable country that helped us win the Revolutionary War and whom we rescued in two world wars? Newsflash to the Biden administration. When you've lost your longest ally, maybe you want to look in the mirror and ask what you've been doing wrong. In addition to the BRICS nations undermining confidence in the dollar, what else are we looking at? You can add on the banking crisis. It started with Silicon Valley Bank, then spread to Silvergate, Signature Bank, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, and First Republic. How many more will fall between the time I'm writing this sentence and the book is released? As you listen to this, you're probably adding a few more banks to the list. How is President Biden responding to this crisis? Well, in October 2022, while he was licking his ice cream, he was asked whether he was concerned about the devaluation of the dollar. He replied, "I'm not concerned about the strength of the dollar. I'm concerned about the rest of the world." Is Biden president of the world, or is he president of the United States? I'm sure there are some days even Biden is uncertain. Why in God's name would you express concern about the global economy, but not that of the United States? Is it because Biden is a globalist and simply considers the United States a temporary vessel for the citizens of America while on the road to a new world order? Instead of worrying about Americans who've fallen on hard times, he's sending pension checks to Ukrainians. This situation is genuinely new to the American Republic. Despite what you might say about them, neither Bill Clinton nor Barack Obama would have allowed this to happen. And if they tried to pull these kinds of shenanigans on Trump, he would have done more than tweet about it. You know, Trump would have fought with every ounce of energy he had. Imagine what Xi in China or Putin in Russia are thinking as they observe this state of affairs in our country. Napoleon said to never interfere with an enemy when they're in the midst of destroying themselves. They don't have to meddle in the United States. We're already doing the job for them. They would know it's time to strike against America because Biden won't defend it. But would we expect a bunch of authoritarian countries to create a new economic order based on the principles of the free market? No, because these countries don't believe in freedom. Like most progressives in this country, they believe you need to be controlled like a misbehaving child. The system they're creating is a central bank digital currency, CBDC, linked to your social credit score. Like a teenager getting an allowance, your money can be turned off in an instant if you do something the rulers of your country don't like. And if you think this happens only among authoritarian countries, just look at what our neighbor to the north, the previously free nation of Canada, did to the bank accounts of truckers who opposed Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's COVID lockdowns and vaccine requirements. The government of any country is like an addict, only needing a single opportunity to find a new way of asserting power, to quickly pick up the habit and use it whenever necessary. This is from a Newsweek article on Trudeau's action in February 2022. Canadian banks have begun freezing the accounts of people linked to the trucker protests in Canada, and the federal government is promising to take more accounts offline in coming days in an attempt to clear demonstrators from Ottawa, which has been occupied for nearly a month. On February 16th, Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland said in a press conference that financial institutions have started freezing accounts and canceling credit cards in accordance with the Emergencies Act, which Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked earlier this week. The powers granted by the act would allow banks to target the accounts of people who have donated to crowdfunding platforms, like the fundraising campaigns on GoFundMe and GiveSendGo that have fueled the ongoing protests. But Freeland said she would not give specifics of whose accounts are being frozen. Can you imagine that simply donating to a protest movement, like maybe Black Lives Matter or Planned Parenthood under a conservative government, could cause you to lose access to your bank account or credit cards? How do you function in a modern society with such draconian measures placed on your right to participate in the political process. Even Great Britain, the home of free speech, appears to be experimenting with this type of tyranny over its political adversaries, like Nigel Farage, who led the successful Brexit movement. From late June 2023 comes this account of Farage's debanking. Having a bank account is necessary to interact with modern society in a basic way, and being deprived of that facility is tantamount to becoming a non-person, a downcast, Nigel Farage said Thursday, as he revealed he and close members of his family are being prevented from holding an account in the United Kingdom. Warning viewers on Thursday night, he reflected, "This is going on in our country. It's happening to plenty of people. I just happen to be one of them. But do you know what? Unless this rot is stopped in time to come, you at home may say things on Facebook or Twitter that result in losing your bank accounts too. That, I think, is how scary this whole thing is." Farage has banked with the same banking group since the 1980s, for both personal and business, he said, and that no reason was given for his long-standing relationship with the unnamed bank being terminated. Farage is one of the most consequential figures in recent English history, and yet he's being driven from his homeland. He continued on, describing these events in a supposed democracy to countries whose lack of political freedoms we regularly disparage. "But I have to note, I was debanked 5 years before Farage, and I've been debanked 4 times. The veteran political campaigner was at risk of becoming a non-person, he said, comparing the campaign to make his life impossible for political undesirables to the worst regimes of the mid-20th century. Farage said on his nightly television talk show on GB News that, "Basically, you've become a non-person. It's rather like living in Germany or Russia 80 years ago, or perhaps even Communist China today. I wonder, are we living in Communist China today, in this country?" The fears of Nigel Farage are well-founded. Not only is the attack on Farage a political one, but he is also currently working as a member of the press. The attack on Farage by the British banking system and the government, as well as attacks by other democracies around the world, can only be seen as a march toward tyranny. The Bretton Woods Agreement of 1944, which immensely benefited the United States, and the fruit of that tree are turning rotten because of bad decisions made by both Republicans and Democrats over successive administrations. Remember the mortgage bailout of 2008 caused by President George W. Bush? That's because the elites in Washington, D.C. thought everybody should be able to get a house, even if you didn't have a job. What could possibly go wrong when you give real estate to people who can't even manage their own checkbooks? They didn't say it at the time, but why were they doing it? You guessed it, because there was too much white supremacy in home ownership. Letting the government run the banks is like giving the keys to a second car to a drunk driver as he stumbles away from the wreckage of his first car. You've got the authoritarian, corrupt countries of the BRICS nations creating their own programmable digital currency linked to an individual's social credit score. And in America, you've got the political class salivating over doing the same thing to our own citizens. Dr. Pippa Malmgren, an economist for the World Economic Forum, said last year that central bank digital currency is coming and that it's programmable, meaning they can cut you off based on your digital social profile. China is the favorite location of the globalists to test their new ideas of control. So is it any wonder we saw China using their social credit ranking system to prevent regular Chinese citizens from making certain purchases? Here's an account of China's system from a 2019 article in The Guardian. China has blocked millions of discredited travelers from buying plane or train tickets as part of the country's controversial social credit system aimed at improving the behavior of citizens. According to the National Public Credit Information Center, Chinese courts banned would-be travelers from buying flights 17.5 million times by the end of 2018. Citizens placed on blacklists for social credit offenses were prevented from buying train tickets 5.5 million times. The report released last week said, once discredited, limited everywhere. The social credit system aims to incentivize trustworthy behavior through penalties as well as rewards. According to a government document about the system, dating from 2014, the aim is to allow the trustworthy to roam everywhere under heaven, while making it hard for the discredited to take a single step. Maybe it's because I've read so much history in my life, but it seems that one of the lessons we never seem to learn is that governments should not be trusted with great power. Our founding fathers understood that the best government is limited in its powers, working best when it protects individual rights or mediates disagreements between individuals. And leading the charge for Chinese-style authoritarianism is the World Economic Forum and American academics, as revealed in a July 2023 article. During a speech at the WEF's 14th annual meeting of the New Champion and Tianjin, China, at the end of June, Eswar Prasad of Cornell University spoke about how governments can program and manipulate central bank digital currencies. In short, Prasad said that CBDCs could be programmed by governments to prevent purchases that are deemed less desirable by those in power. You could have, as I argue in my book, a potentially better, and some might say darker, world, Prasad said, where the government decides that units of central bank money can be used to purchase some things, but not other things that it deems less desirable, like, say, ammunition, or drugs, or pornography. I will admit to you that at the current moment, there is little public support for a central bank programmable digital currency linked to your social credit score. But that doesn't mean they aren't building the infrastructure of such a system. A guest on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast in 2022, British broadcaster Majid Nawaz, detailed some of the dangers of central bank digital currencies. As Nawaz pointed out to Rogan on Saturday's episode of the popular podcast, part of the reason that legislators are so drawn to the notion of CNDC is that this form of money is programmable and controllable. What they want to do is bring in this thing called the central banking digital currency, begins Nawaz. They want to replace paper fiat money with digital money as a competitor to Bitcoin and crypto money. But instead of a decentralized currency, it will be controlled by the government. That sounds terrifying, said Rogan. If you try to buy unhealthy meat, it just won't work. You tap your card and you can't buy that thing because you've met your quota of burgers. You'll have to buy a vegan meal instead, explained Nawaz. The approach of the tyrants is always the same. Try to get you to agree to the small violation of rights. We'll just start by not allowing you to buy drugs. Then comes ammunition. Next is pornography, followed by unhealthy foods. Yeah, they'll never block that. And then after that, maybe controversial voices like yours truly or Joe Rogan. These people will never stop until they have you under their total control. Remember how Bill Gates and his buddy Klaus Schwab put on Event 201, a simulated pandemic outbreak of a coronavirus in October 2019, just before COVID-19 supposedly appeared in our world, and not as a leak or attack from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, but according to today's fiction, a raccoon dog. To slightly alter the famous message of Kevin Costner's classic baseball film, Field of Dreams, if they build it, they will use it. They want to terrify you into giving up your rights. So the first step in fighting back is to not be afraid. If you are scared and trembling in the face of their plans, they will manipulate you. They're trying to persuade you because if you stand up, they lose. Be bold in your dissent. Laugh in their faces. Here's how I think they're going to use the central bank digital currency. They will use their control to cut you off from your money if you disagree with whatever the current narrative is at that time. But be loud in how you will use this system against them, and then smile. Imagine, if you will, the horror among liberals at the idea that some future government could make the pronouncement, Alex Jones was right about everything, and anybody who disagreed with that statement wouldn't be able to buy groceries for their family that week. You might think that's a crazy idea, that people might be scared into adopting a digital currency, but look how quickly people conformed during the COVID-19 crisis to avoid visiting their elderly parents, putting a mask over their face and lowering their daily oxygen intake while increasing carbon dioxide, keeping their kids home from school, and lining up to get that gene-editing shot, along with a whole host of nasty chemicals injected into their arms. This didn't happen because people are stupid. It's because Big Pharma and their government allies used highly persuasive propaganda to get people to comply. You should know that when Big Pharma is pushing a new drug, they do intensive psychological profiles of the doctors to whom they're trying to sell the drug, then choose the sales representatives who are most likely to make a positive impression on these doctors. They used people's best traits, their desire to care for other human beings, to engage in profoundly inhuman ways and become isolated and fragmented from others. The question is quickly becoming, what do we do about their plans? The first thing you can do is become aware of what's happening. Because the mainstream media doesn't want to tell you these things. Knowledge is power. The simple act of you reading and understanding this information arms you with some powerful weapons. What needs to be understood is that the people who are bringing in this central bank digital currency are the same people who have ruined the current system and caused these bank failures. And there is another danger that a lot of people don't currently understand. There are a lot of transactions that don't leave a trace. You're at a flea market. You see some little statue you like and offer the guy selling it $20. The government never knows you bought that crappy little statue. But maybe it means something deeply personal to you, which, thankfully, will never end up in some government database. It's called our privacy. Do you want it to be known how much you tipped the waiters at your local restaurant? I'm a generous tipper, but you might not be. When transactions are done in cash, they can't be tracked. We have allowed that system to exist for generations. I would argue that our ability to use cash in relatively small amounts is part of what keeps our society moving in a positive direction. Who will the government come down on first? The poor. Those just struggling to make ends meet, like waiters and waitresses, delivery drivers, and others at the entry point of their careers. Why? First, because they're easier to pressure, and second, if they can make you docile from the beginning of your working life, it's a good bet you'll stay that way. Once they've crushed the poor, they'll move on to the middle class, and eventually the wealthy. The reason they wait so long to take on the wealthy is because they know the wealthy have so much power. In the interim, they'll lie to the wealthy that this system will never be turned against them. But it's a lie. If the wealthy understood these people's plans, they could stop the globalists in a few weeks. As Winston Churchill once said of appeasement to Hitler, it's like feeding your friends to the crocodile in the hope he'll eat you last. Here's how they'll try to sell it to you in a populist message, which only leads to more governmental control. You need to be protected from these greedy banks who have ruined everything. We in the government will come in like a knight on a shiny white horse with additional rules and regulations to make sure these scavengers don't do anything like this ever again. But what they'll do is take over the banks and then hand them back to their friends. It's like a mafia don who buys a restaurant to use as a place to launder money, in addition to having a decent place to eat, only to torch the place for the insurance proceeds when the restaurant's debts become too crushing. I want my listeners to understand this is nothing new. This is always how corruption tries to control society. The merger of big business and big government is nothing new. Just look at Hitler's Germany, Mussolini's Italy, or modern China. But we have to name it if we're going to have any hope of defeating it, and we need to understand the propaganda. What they say is bad is actually good and vice versa. Be aware that when they criticize cryptocurrency, that means you should probably take a look at it. Same thing for precious metals like gold and silver, or real estate not burdened by excessive mortgages. A reckoning is coming for our economy, and they're going to try to build back better with a central bank digital currency linked to your social credit score. An interesting idea floated by Larry Sharp, well-known podcaster and the libertarian candidate for New York governor in 2018, is that the financial recklessness of many states is just a ploy to bring about bankruptcy in these states, allowing the federal government to step in and institute CBDCs, as well as a social credit score. This is basically a Cloward-Piven strategy, named after the approach popularized in 1966 by American sociologists Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven, in which the government would put forth policies intentionally designed to exacerbate social tensions. Then, when things fell apart, the government could swoop in and claim even more sweeping powers. You see, with the globalists, it's always about that emergency that allows them to take away your freedom. At first, they'll tell you something like, it's just for criminals or deadbeat dads, and don't you want to make sure the children are protected? But it's coming for all of us. We can fight back by not letting them step one foot farther, but I'd have backups ready. Stockpile your cash. Have some of your assets in gold, silver, crypto, or low mortgage real estate. They don't have the strength to overpower us. The most important thing is knowing how to garden, have a good community of friends, and learn how to hunt and fish. We can overcome their plans. At an instinctive level, humanity understands this, which is why we're seeing a historic exodus from the cities. They need a crisis to panic people into demanding it. I want you to be the Minutemen on the front line of freedom. We can stop the cashless economy.